Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 94. This is Dave.
This is Gord Brody.
Oh, gosh, yes. Barry and Melissa had other things going on, so we're taking a break from the Wes Craven series. If you check our Facebook feed, you probably know what we're talking about. But what are we talking about this week, Ethan?
Daddy, would you like some sausage? Daddy, would you like some sausages? We're talking about Tom Green.
The oeuvre of Tom Green. Okay, something like that. I don't know. It's going to be fun. Let's talk about what we watched this week, though. I guess I will start because I knocked a huge one off my list of shame today. Actually, right before we recorded, we're recording on Halloween a little bit early, so, you know, we can relax on Sunday. I don't know. It just worked out that way. But I finally saw the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
It's funny. Well, did it make you appreciate New Nightmare more?
Or? It totally did. Although it was kind of weird when Johnny Depp was like, it's just a dream, savvy. That just kind of, I don't know, that was a little bit weird. That joke was god-awful. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, for that joke. No, the earthquake thing, really, I really liked that.
Oh, yeah.
They're talking about, oh, you know, everything gets weird before an earthquake. That made me appreciate New Nightmare and the phone thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it's one of my, it'd be in my top 100 movies of all time. Even though I admit it has flaws, like it, some of the acting is pretty.
Oh, Nancy. Dude.
Yeah.
Like she's way better in New Nightmare than in Nightmare on Elm Street.
And she's pretty bad in New Nightmare too, so.
Oh, wow.
It's yeah. Just saying something. But I just, the overall execution of it and just how great the concept is and how scary it is, just it makes it one of my favorites.
Yeah, and I actually bought it. They had it at Best Buy for like $7.50, and I had a $10 gift card.
Was it the Infinity film?
It was, with the DTS 6.1 discrete audio. Oh, wow, that made the nightmare sequences awesome.
Yeah.
It was very good. I dug the crap out of it. And I saw some other stuff that I don't quite remember or I can't talk about yet.
Got to write it down, man. That's what I do.
I know. Oh, I saw. No, never mind. That's getting to the DVD releases. Yeah, we'll get there.
Okay.
What about you, sir?
Well, okay. I myself crossed a movie off my list of shame. This also being a horror movie, Bride of Frankenstein.
Isn't that a funny movie?
Well, it's funny. You were talking. It's funny because I was watching it, and there were so many scenes I thought. I say, wasn't that the original one? It's been a few years since I've seen the original one, but I also saw, like about a few months ago, I saw Young Frankenstein. Mm-hmm. So I think I was just confusing the two. So
that will be probably watched at some point this weekend as well.
Yeah, that's – yeah. But it was good. There was a scene in particular that actually kind of reminded me a lot of a Gilliam film where there's this – crazy doctor guy in the movie, and he's approaching Dr. Frankenstein. He has these jars full of little people in them, and I thought that is like so Gilliam-esque.
Totally.
So, yeah, and I read Ebert's The Great Movies essay after watching it. He pointed out like all the gay subtext in it. I was like, whoa.
Really?
I'd even seen Gods and Monsters, which is a biopic of the director, James Whale.
Okay.
And so I should have picked up on that, but that's why Ebert, that's why he's one of the greats, you know?
This is true. And I did think of something else I watched. I watched Scream with the Wes Craven commentary.
Oh, yeah? How was that?
Wes Craven does a good commentary. I liked his commentary on that and New Nightmare. I'll have to watch it on Nightmare on Elm Street, but he's very laid back, almost stone sounding.
I remember seeing him. Was it Craig Ferguson? I think so.
Probably.
And I think he was promoting Red Eye at the time. And he was like nothing against the guy, but he was not a very good interview subject. He was very kind of – he looked kind of nervous and just kind of like he wasn't really willing to get into a jokey tone and stuff. And
yeah, it's definitely more of a dry commentary, like the technical side of it and where his, you know, his inspiration for things came from and whatever. And yeah, like he's very self-conscious because he was talking about how he didn't want to sound – cocky when they had the line in Scream, you know, well, the first Nightmare was good, but the rest of them sucked because he did the first one. And then Williamson reminded him, oh, wait, you did the last one, too. So you can still count that in there.
Well, sorry. I think he co-wrote number three. So he had his hands in the pot on that one. So
possible.
But Yeah. Well, I saw Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
The movie?
Yeah.
And how does that hold up compared to the series?
Well, as you guys should know, I'm a big fan of the show. And, you know, I eventually knew one day I'm going to have to watch this movie, you know. And I said to myself, you know what, I'm going to put aside any biases. I know this will not reach any of the creative highs that the show reached. But still, my problem with this movie is it's very just flat and static. Whedon's script for it is actually pretty good, but just the direction it is so just bland and eh. And yeah, it doesn't work overall. But Paul Rubens is good in it, though.
I was going to say, Pee-wee Herman was sweet. But he has the best death scene in a movie I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that was the one scene where I'm like, this is good.
Yeah. I can leave the rest of the movie, but that...
Yeah. Well, that's a good transition for my next movie because I watched Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Wow. Going on the retro kick.
Yeah. I have to say, you know, I hate a lot on Tim Burton, but this gave him a few points in my book.
That's a good movie. It absolutely is. Have you seen Big Top Pee-wee?
No, I haven't.
Okay, you should totally check that out too.
But this was an awesome movie, especially at the end, the movie they make about him with James Brolin as PW and stuff.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
It is. I definitely will give Burton his due when he deserves it, and he definitely does with that one.
Actually, it's fine. Well, I was just doing some research on Pee-wee Herman, and I know that wasn't it, well, before this movie came out, there was the Pee-wee Herman show, but wasn't that like a more adult-oriented?
It was.
So it's kind of weird they decide to make a family movie out of that.
Yeah. It is a bit odd. And even the TV show is a bit much for kids, I think, even.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta go back.
Cool. Did you catch anything else?
Yeah, a few other things. I revisited Ghost World for the first time in quite a while.
That's such a good movie.
It is, and it was really interesting seeing Scarlett Johansson back then. You know, she was still very attractive, but it was kind of before, you know, like, perfume ad Scarlett Johansson, you know what I mean?
Yes. Before. What's the Woody Allen movie, the tennis one?
Match Point?
Yeah, before Match Point Johansson.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's a really good, really good film. Yeah, Buscemi, he's awesome in it. And yeah, I have you read the comic?
I have not. I need to.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. It would give me some indie cred.
Just go to a Borders and find it there and just sit down and read it.
Yeah, so people can watch me read it and be like, that guy's indie.
Or you can just, you know, read it for free as opposed to having to buy it.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah. So you got the image side of it. I'm just like the practical side.
Yeah. Well, my next movie here was a doozy. It was a little movie called Frankenhooker.
And what made you get to this point? This is what I want to know. What made you think, hey, I'm going to sit down and watch Frankenhooker?
I think, well, I would say I want horror movies to watch on Halloween time. And I think I remember it was Jay Chiel from Film Junk who said it was one of his favorite horror comedies. So, and the title was very appealing.
Okay.
But, well, I'll just get into it now. It opens with this kind of guy, and he's kind of like a scientist, and he's experimenting on this brain with, like, an eyeball in it.
Okay.
And they're having, like, a lawn party, and... his fiance is there, and this is kind of the scene where I knew the movie was going to be a little whack, aside from the title, but his fiance is talking about how fat she is, and how she has, like, an eating disorder, and I was kind of wondering at first if it was supposed to be sarcastic, because this woman was not in the least fat at all.
Okay.
Like, not at all. So I'm like, okay. But then she gets killed by one of his experiments, a lawnmower.
It's okay.
Pretty good scene. And so, you know, he decides he needs to make a new woman out of her, left from the few remaining parts of her. Like, she has the head and a few of the, I think, her hand and stuff. And but he does this weird thing where he has, like, a power drill, and he, like, puts it through a slot in his head and puts it into his brain, and he presses it, and, like, it starts making him, like, monologuing about his motivations. So
okay.
So then he decides he needs to find a few hookers and stuff. So he drives into Times Square. Remember, this is...
Because, yeah, that's early. Where else would you go in the 80s?
This is early. Yeah, well, this is 1990, but, you know, still.
Yeah, close enough.
And he gets a bunch of hookers. He talks about doing it. But first he has to talk to their pimp, this guy named Zorro, who's this big, ripped dude.
Does he wear a mask?
No, but he's just big muscles and stuff, and okay. Has a sweet mustache, and he's talking to him about having a beauty contest for them, and he's like, yeah, yeah, but then he buys some crystal meth from Zorro, and he experiments with it at home, and he does it where this way, if you have it, you explode. He experiments with it on a hamster.
Is this a trauma film?
No, this part of the movie, it kind of reminded me a lot of Martin Scorsese's After Hours, but like a horror version of it. But anyway, he goes and he has a beauty contest with the hookers and stuff, where he like measures their ass cheeks and stuff and their legs, trying to determine who's the best one. But he's like, oh, I can't decide. And they're all getting mad at him. So he's like, oh, you just want your money? We'll have it. And he tosses this bag of money and they all get it. But then they see all this, the crystal meth at the bottom, the crystal meth he was experimenting with. And they all take it and start smoking it and stuff.
And do they all explode?
They all blow up. And Zorro comes in because he's like, hey, where's the hookers? And then the head blows off one of the girls and knocks him out. And the guy, he's standing in like this whole mess of just blown off limbs and stuff. He's like, I want to apologize for blowing you guys up, but I'm gonna fix you and stuff. So later, yeah, he's like sorting through the breasts and stuff, and sorting through legs, and he brings his girlfriend, well, his fiance back to life, and I won't spoil the rest of the movie.
See, I could have known. I could have used knowing about this movie last night. It was my last night working at Hollywood Video, because yeah, that was enough of that. But there's a guy last night. He's like, "Hey, got any good horror movies?" I'm like, "Well, what kind do you want?" Thinking, you know, psychological, gory, whatever. He's like, "Boobs."
Yeah,
boobs
would have been a good.
Yeah, boobs. I'm like, that's a man who knows what he wants. And yeah, I was like, dude, just pick a movie in the horror section. You're good to go.
Yeah, but it was a good movie. I admired it a lot.
You're gonna go buy it?
Yeah.
You hoping they do a Criterion like they're hopefully gonna do for Good Burger someday?
Hopefully, we can only hope.
Wow, was that your finale, or have you still got more?
One last thing, that was just a little better.
I don't know how you can top that, honestly.
I watched Eyes Without a Face. Have you heard of this movie?
I have not.
It's a classic French horror film. It's on Criterion, so you know it's good.
Okay.
But it's about this girl who was in an automobile accident, and she kind of has no face. Like, she wears like this mask over her face and stuff. And her dad is like this brilliant surgeon who's making all these like breakthroughs. So what they do is they kind of lure women there, and they cut off their face and like give it to their daughter and stuff. And it's a very creepy movie. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Very atmosphere. I think it's pretty well regarded, though. One thing that was a little weird, though, is there's the music in the movie. It's sort of just this one piece, but it sounds a lot like the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme. So
that's going to take you out of it a little bit here and there.
Yeah, just a little, but it was very good. I'd recommend it.
Very cool. Right on. Well, then let us move on to what came out in theaters this week. Help you know if I actually had my notes up and stuff. Details. Coming out, what came out this week, actually came out Wednesday, is Michael Jackson's This Is Eat. Wow.
This Is Eat.
You know, Andrew over at GM Interviews was like, I'm going to go see it because, you know, it's Halloween. Does that work? And I said, well, it is a zombie movie, isn't it?
Oh, Dave.
Da-dum-tsh. Okay, so yeah, and depending on who you listen to, it made like $67 million opening day, or like seven. Yeah. That's the only like wide release this week. Then limited release, we've got The Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day, Gentlemen Broncos, and The House of the Devil. I didn't see anything of these at all. Yeah.
No, neither did I.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Next week's good, at least.
Next week looks quite promising, yes. As long as you didn't listen to Cameron Diaz, you'll be in great shape. Never mind. We'll get there at the end of the show. Coming out in DVD this coming week is G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, which I could have watched instead of Wes Craven's New Nightmare, but I decided to be smart. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street. See, this is what happens when we do the show a day early. Sorry about that. We've got the Taking of Bellum 123, North by Northwest 50th Anniversary Edition on Blu-ray and DVD, Aliens in the Attic, Barry's favorite movie of the year, I Love You, Beth Cooper, and then I also, one that I saw was the Will Ferrell special, You're Welcome, America, the George Bush thing. That was really funny.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
I was concerned it wasn't going to be able to make it through a half hour, like a half hour, let alone an hour and a half.
But it held your attention?
It did. And it was funny. And yeah, I liked it a lot, especially the Secret Service agent who started dancing more and more.
Yeah, and I liked it when he called Barack Obama the Tiger Woods guy.
Yeah, not my problem anymore. It's Tiger Woods guy's fault. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, this is like the quickest releases we've ever gone through. All right. That must be because we have a ton of news to get through.
And a ton of Freddy Got Fingered to discuss.
Yes, we do. All right, I will let you kick it off, sir. We'll do a little back and forth because we've both got a few stories this week.
Okay, well, we've got a doubleheader of
Matt Damon.
The trailers for both Green Zone and Invictus came out. Do you want to? Which one should we get into first?
I didn't see either one, so I'll let you just talk about.
Wow.
You know, but they both feature
Matt Damon.
So why don't you tell us how he is in these trailers?
Okay, Green Zone. This is the newest film from Paul Greengrass. It's a Iraq war movie, and it looks awesome. It looks kind of like a good version of Body of Lies with Damon with Damon being DiCaprio and Greg Kinnear being Russell Crowe, but not as fat.
But it's Paul Greengrass and Matt Damon. So it's like Born in Iraq?
Yeah, in fact, that's the thing. The trailer makes it very much look like a Born movie, like very action-packed and intense. And I think there was another, like an international trailer that made it look a little more less action-y. But I'm actually really looking forward to just an action movie in Iraq. I don't know. I think that's a good setting. Maybe it's all the Call of Duty 4 I played. But, you know, I'm looking forward to it.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
At all whatsoever. Okay, and then the other one?
Next, Invictus. This is the newest Oscar bait from Clint Eastwood. It's about Nelson Mandela, as played by Danny Glover. No, Morgan Freeman.
Okay. I was waiting for Marlon Wayans.
Damon Wayans.
Ah, there you go. Keenan Ivory.
Yeah, anyway.
this is going bad places.
Oh, boy. Let me just read the official synopsis of IMDb, because I'm sure I will screw it up. Let me just Google that. Invictus. The film tells the inspiring true story of how Nelson Mandela joined forces with the captain of South Africa's rugby team to help unite the country. Newly elected President Mandela knows his nation remains racially and economically divided in the wake of apartheid. Believing he can bring his people together through the universal language of sport, Mandela rallies South Africa's rugby team as they make their historic run to the 1995 Rugby World Cup Championship match.
Okay.
Matt Damon's the rugby captain.
Okay.
Because if there's anything Americans love, it's rugby.
Totally. Drunk college frat boys do.
It's funny watching the trailer. I was like, it's South Africa. I'm like, where are the aliens?
It's one thing we're always going to associate with District 9 now, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all good. I got coming up next. Apparently, the Roger Rabbit sequel is being written by the original film screenwriters, which could be good. I guess they're talking about making the characters 2D still.
Yeah, it'll be motion captured. I guarantee.
I know. Well, and they're saying it might be mocap, but in 2D. I don't know. It sounds like they don't know what they're doing yet. They're just throwing a bunch of stuff out there and see what people think of it.
It's going to be Michael J. Fox in a mocap suit playing a bear or something. I guarantee it.
Okay, so it's like The Wicker Man?
Oh, that would be good.
There you go. That was, wow, non sequitur. Yeah, this is non sequitur week. All right, what'd you got, sir?
Peter Berg has left the director's chair for the newest adaptation of Frank Herbert's Dune.
What's more interesting, that or who they're talking about getting to replace him?
Well, you know, I don't mind Peter Berg, but you know what? He can go do his Battleship movie, you know? I want a visionary director for this, which is why they're talking to both Neil Marshall and Neil Blomkamp for the director's position.
Do you have a personal preference between these two?
Probably Blomkamp, but I like Neil Marshall a lot too. I didn't like Doomsday, but I Dog Soldiers was pretty sweet. Descent was pretty sweet, so he'd be good. Though I kind of like to see Blomkamp kind of stick to original material, you know. But
yeah, but this is also, I mean, it's a pretty epic story that I think it could do. I think either of them could pull it off, frankly.
Yeah,
I'm kind of cool with either one.
Dune's one of my favesies books, so you know I'm anxious about it. You know,
cool, right on. Well, to go from one thing that could possibly use a remake theoretically to something that makes no sense. Apparently, we're getting a Gattaca TV series.
I haven't seen Gattaca, so I can't comment.
You should. It's a good movie. It's a good drama, kind of a slow burn. It's really fascinating, but there really weren't any questions left to be answered by the movie.
Okay.
And I see this bombing horribly.
Wait, I was just thinking, wasn't there supposed to be a Children of Men TV show at one point?
Theoretically, I don't know what ever happened to that, though.
Would you compare it to that in terms of uselessness?
And the fact that you don't need to explain anything more in this universe? Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, everything needs to be said. I mean, it's not like... There's some films where there's enough interesting material in there, and there are enough interesting backstory and figure, you know, characters... That you could try to, you know, try to explore that universe some, but there's really nothing to really explore in this. They kind of took care of that just fine in the film.
Well, I guess that's a good transition for a movie for Tony Scott making a Chippendales movie.
Okay, now you're bringing this because he's making a Chippendales movie, or because of the picture that every single site that's posted this is used?
No, I want to see a Chippendales movie. You know. With Frank Caliendo and...
David Spade?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm good just rewatching the Patrick Swayze, Chris Farley SNL skit, and I'm good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Are you, like, really interested in seeing this, or...?
Well, maybe. For all we know, it could be an interesting story—the rise and fall of Chippendales. You know, maybe there's some pretty interesting dynamics behind that.
I'm sure there are, honestly.
But yeah, it's like a thing with the internet. We like to kind of just write off stuff, you know. Just if it's like the Facebook movie thing, right? The Social Network.
Yeah.
A lot of us just like Facebook the movie.
And then Fincher got involved, and we went,
"Oh!"
I'll totally admit to doing that. As soon as he got involved, then I was there. Absolutely.
Though, you know, Tony Scott, I can't really see him doing anything now that isn't an action movie, just because his style is so utterly chaotic.
Which is prime for a Chippendales movie.
Yeah, it'd be just like these weird filters and stuff and shaky cam while like Patrick Swayze or Chris Farley is dancing, you know, and
the quick flash zoom to Farley's gut as he's jumping up and down. Yeah.
Yeah, and throw in Jay-Z song remixed by Nine Inch Nails or something, and yeah.
As covered by Good Charlotte, right?
Oh, boy.
Okay, yeah, I'm not too interested in that. Although this one has me very interested. This is my last news story. Apparently we're getting another Men in Black movie. That doesn't, you know, interest me all that much until I find out that, is it Eitan?
Yeah.
Cohen is writing it, who is the guy who wrote Tropic Thunder.
Wait, I just realized something about that.
Yes.
If you took the H out of the Cohen and put it back into his first name, he'd be Ethan Cohen.
He would.
Oh, my God.
It's a pseudonym.
Same person.
It's a pseudonym.
This is conspiracy.
Yes, yes. But, you know, if there's something to bring life back to the Men in Black series, you know, not that it's, you know, 5-10 years too late, I think Men in Black crossed with Tropic Thunder potentially could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Tommy Lee Jones in blackface.
Or Will Smith in whiteface.
That would just blow my mind.
That would just turn it into a sequel to White Chicks, though, then, wouldn't it?
I guess. But it's like Will Smith, you know, I'm kind of disappointed with the guy. It's like 7 pounds tank, so he just goes back to the well, you know, he's doing Hancock 2 and now this. It's like, I think he said he was going to quit doing action movies, but no, he's stuck doing them, you know.
Yeah, but there is one upside to this. If Will Smith does another Men in Black movie, might we get a return to rap from Will Smith?
That would make it all worthwhile.
It could be a complete turd of a movie. That would make the production worth it.
Yeah.
Here come Men in Black, Galaxy Defenders.
Okay, maybe not.
It's a good song.
It is. It is. That you just did something to. I don't know what that was exactly, though.
Shut up.
All right.
I made it better.
You did. You did. You're taking it back. I'll let you finish whatever news you've got left, because that was my last one.
Okay, the cast of Mad Max Fury Road has just gotten 2 members. Tom Hardy will be playing Mad Max. You may have seen him, well, probably haven't, because this movie is pretty obscure, but he recently won a lot of acclaim for his role in the film Bronson, and I believe he played the clone of Jean-Luc Picard in Star Trek Nemesis.
Okay, one of those is really good and one of those is really bad.
Yeah.
Because Chris Dipp loved Bronson.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. He dug the crap out of it.
Okay, so I'm sure we should get him on here right now. Call him up.
I'm doubting he's going to answer me right now.
Dave, you never know. You know, it's like that girl and you got to ask her to the prom to know she'll say no, you know? To continue that news, Charlize Theron has also been cast as what I guess is the love interest, so it should be interesting.
But no word on Tina Turner yet, huh?
Oh, my God, please! The thing I just worry about is that the thing I love about the Mad Max films is how practical they are. But George Miller, you know, knowing how I'm sure he's come pretty comfortable with CGI, you know, like directing Happy Feet and stuff. Can you just sew this to see this just being like an Indiana Jones 4?
Ooh. Oh, dang.
Like CGI car chases and stuff. And.
But will there be crotch shots in the jungle? That's the real question. We can only hope. No, I don't think it could be that bad, honestly. I don't think it could get down to those depths. I really don't.
Yeah.
Well, I hope not.
We'll see.
Yeah, I'm trying to think positively.
I think it'll be good. So.
Okay, cool.
That's all?
That's all you got? All right, cool. Let's take a quick break, and I'm saving my energy for our discussion on the man, the myth, the legend, Tom Green himself. We will be right back.
In a world where knowledge is power, in an age where time is the most valuable commodity, in a voice that's killing my throat, comes a podcast that will bring you wisdom in less than 1 minute a day. So join me, Martin Darkley, as we journey to enlightenment. Our teachers, classic lines from cinema history. Come then to moviemantras.com and begin a voyage to a higher state.
Hi, this is J.C. Hutchins, author of Seven Sun Descent, the new science fiction thriller novel available in bookstores right now, and you're listening to the latest and greatest episode of Screen Geeks.
And our thanks to J.C. Hutchins for that very kind little drop. I actually did an interview with him on like Thursday night. I'm going to be posting it hopefully around the same time this posts. Give it a listen. He's got a new book out. It's pretty good stuff, too. But this week, this is kind of your show, isn't it, Ethan?
You could say that.
You've been talking about doing an episode like this for how long?
I think like close to a year.
Yeah, yeah. And the dream has come true.
Yay.
What are we talking about this week?
We are talking about the Canadian man, the Canadian myth, the Canadian legend, Tom Green.
So is he bigger than like Bryan Adams?
10 times bigger. He's like Bryan Adams, Alanis Morissette, Ryan Reynolds, William Shatner, David Cronenberg, the Bare Naked Ladies, and name one more Canadian person.
I can't. You can't possibly mean he's bigger than Joshua Jackson.
And Joshua Jackson rolled into 10 with a stick of dynamite, some butter, cheese, firecrackers,
and especially painted hood of a car.
Yeah, all put together and exploding at the same time. That's what he is.
Okay. So where would you like to begin our discussion of the venerable Mr. Green?
Let's start at the beginning. Let's start at his work with MTV.
Okay, I wasn't sure if you're going to go back to like back to like the public access show or not.
No, I think we should just talk about what people know the most, you know.
Okay. Which some people may not, you know, cuz our listeners can be a bit younger.
Oh, fuck them.
Okay then. All right.
Just kidding. I love you, listeners.
Yep, you just watched Freddy Got Fingered again. Okay, go ahead, sir.
Well, as you may, or if you're listening to this, or you may have tuned off because I just offended you by telling you to
bleep
fudge off.
Yes.
Tom Green, you know, really how he got his career, you know, how he got famous? Well,
torturing his friends.
Yeah, he's really, I think he really started the Jackass trend, I think. If there would be no Jackass if there wasn't Tom Green. Like, he really, the stuff he did on MTV on his own show was pretty crazy and pretty innovative in terms of, you know, like reality television and just tormenting his friends and especially his parents.
I was going to say, there's no safe place to be from Tom Green, pretty much.
Exactly. And though as much as he torments people, sometimes you watch his stuff and you notice it's kind of like the Borat thing where it's not really him who's the problem. In fact, I saw this clip, I believe it's in the Conan interview I gave to Dave before the show, where he's interviewing an old man and in his hometown of Ottawa, which is in Canada, the capital city of Canada, in fact. But where he's just saying, "Oh, what are you doing?" This old man. This man gets pissed off and starts like to the point where he's like starting to hit Tom Green. And well, maybe it was like rude of Tom Green to do that. You know, did he really provoke that much of a response? So really, not only would there be no Jackass without Tom Green, you could say there would be no Borat or Bruno or Ali G without Tom Green and his show.
I think he definitely opened the door. You can definitely make that argument.
Exactly. And
do you want to give some examples of the things he would do to his friends and family?
Well,
I know a lot of them we really can't even say on air without getting an explicit tag, so I'm guessing we're getting one on this episode.
Well, he could say this was his friend, but he humped a dead moose once.
Yes, but not in the movie.
No, but he had an X-rated lesbian scene painted on his father's car, which he labeled the Slutmobile.
On the hood of the car, so there's no way to get around it.
Yeah.
That was like the first time that everyone really took notice of him was when he did that.
And he put a cow head in his parents' bed because his dad was a big fan of The Godfather.
I like the statue he put in the front lawn.
Yeah, and one time he crashed the press conference of Grey Owl, starring Pierce Brosnan, which was a movie about a Canadian figure. And he basically started like hitting on Pierce Brosnan and like kissing him and stuff. And Brosnan actually like told, like, he thought Green was a genuine journalist and thought he told him, "Yo, don't quit your job. You're good at it, man."
I thought that was, he was just being, you know, going along for the ride on that one.
Well, you never know.
You never know. Now I want to get back to this statue real quick, because it was what? It was like a woman beating his wife or something, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that was a special little thing. Yeah. Mom and Dad, this is just want you to give you this little memento of when I was a kid, my recollections of it.
Well, you go.
Like when he would break into like Glenn's place, like while he and his woman were intertwined, shall we say?
Yes.
Like there is no off switch with Tom Green.
Exactly. In fact, there's a rumor that his show was canceled because of a segment that was unaired where he showed up to a bar mitzvah dressed as Hitler.
No.
But, well, apparently he denies it, but you never know.
You know, he has a way of being very creative, no matter where he goes, whether it's on his show or anyone else's show. For instance, I remember back, oh goodness, this must have been, this is probably while his show, when his show first got canned from MTV. Tom Green went on the O'Reilly Factor, because we know Bill O'Reilly is the paragon of journalistic integrity. And he is talking with Tom Green and gets to this point where he always goes off on, quote unquote, the rap music. I love how like old people call it the whatever. And then rap music just makes it funnier. So here's a little excerpt from it. I couldn't find the video, but this is actually like a transcription of it. O'Reilly: they both said to me, we now have 10-year-old boys calling 10-year-old girls bitches and hoes. Tom Green: that's kind of fun to be able to say bitches and hoes on the Fox News channel. Can I just say that on the Fox News channel? Well, you bet you can. Really? Well, we should be careful. There could be kids watching. You know, just... And when he said it, he after that, he just kind of looks thoughtfully into the air and just goes, bitches and hoes. It's brilliant. Yes.
Well,
pretty much wherever he goes, it's not safe.
I know. And do you want to get into his movie now?
Well, you need to get into all the movies. I don't want to just pick on one.
Okay, well, let's start chronologically first. Road Trip.
He was good in it, I think.
Yeah, he was good. I thought he was very funny. He's in fact, it's interesting. He doesn't actually really interact with any of the group in the film, because he's sort of the tour guide. Yeah, he's like the narrator. It's funny, but he's like, he adds such an awesome presence to it. And I think, well, you were saying to me off air, and this is probably something you're going to say a lot, but you like him in small doses, and it's small doses in this movie, and you liked it.
Absolutely. And the scene you think of from Road Trip is when he is laying on the ground with the one lady.
And
as the camera's on the crane and zooms out, it's like, oh, mommy. Like that, for some reason, made me laugh hysterically.
Yeah. Isn't there a scene with a snake, too?
I'm sure there is. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Yeah, it's me too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was also in Charlie's Angels.
Which was a glorified cameo.
Yeah, I thought he was hilarious in that, though.
He was. Yeah.
I'm turning you on to him.
Oh, no. Like I said, I like him in small doses. And maybe quite when he doesn't push the edge so much. I think that might be part of it, too. But we'll be getting there.
Well, now we get into the Orson Welles period of his career, where he wrote, directed, and starred in his own movie.
Do you want to do that first, or do you want to do Stealing Harvard?
No, let's just do this first, because we're going chronologically.
Okay. And what is the title again?
Freddy Got Fingered.
And that is actually uttered as a line in the movie.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, the main character is not actually Freddy. It is Gord Brody. It's played by Tom Green, who is a 28-year-old man who
You hear that once or twice, don't you? That he's 28. He's a 28-year-old man.
Yeah. Well, he goes off to Hollywood to achieve his dreams of being a cartoonist. And you think, oh, this is just going to be a comedy with him, you know, being in wacky Hollywood. And he's a straight man and everything. But
you had to say whack, didn't you?
But that ends about 20 minutes into the movie, and then that's where it goes into its most kind of surrealistic art house places, I think.
And yeah.
It becomes very much a movie about father and son relationships.
It becomes that, but when they're like, okay, I'm going off to Hollywood, and he has getting ready to get on the bus, they're like, you're not taking the bus, you're going to take this car.
Yeah.
And he drives by a stud farm for horses. and they were getting ready to do an extraction with a horse. And he stops the car screaming, jumps the fence, is like, I want to play with the horse. Like, he's going to, like, milk the horse. Oh, gosh. Like, and he's actually, like, yeah, it's real. That's all I can really say. Because I really don't want to offend too many people, although it's kind of impossible with this movie.
I love off the earlier scene, just when he gets in his car and he's like, I'm going to make you proud, Dad. Then he's driving. He's like, get the fuck out of the way to people in traffic.
Oh. Yes. And then he helps milk the horse. And it kind of, I don't know if you can really say it goes downhill from there, but it goes odd places you never thought a movie actually could go.
I think this movie is autobiographical, in fact, because I think it really is about Tom Green's relationship with his father. And this is really about him if he had not, well, gotten so famous, you know?
I could see that. Rip Torn is, yeah, wow, he was good as the dad, too.
Oh, yeah, he's like, oh, I'm trying to find this particular quote. Oh, yes. He's 28 years old. He can eat a chicken sandwich.
Yes.
Very impressive. Mike Fitzgibbon's son is a nuclear physicist, and my son can eat a chicken.
Yes. He's like, yeah, apparently he couldn't quite make it in the sandwich-making industry, so yeah, now he's living back at home.
You can't hurt me, not with my cheese helmet.
Oh, good Lord.
It was the scene, too, when he's in the bathroom, he's in the scuba gear and stuff. And
the treasure.
Oh, my God. And Daddy, of course. Daddy, would you like some sausage?
That was very odd. A lot of it's surrealistic, and I'm okay with the surrealistic parts, but it kind of sometimes it just goes off so far off the deep end that it just pulls you out of the movie completely. Such as when his best friend gets the compound fracture on his leg.
He starts licking it?
Yeah, that was just like, okay, I could have rolled with this until that point. That was kind of like the tipping point for me.
Yeah, I'm going to pull up A.O. Scott from the New York Times. He was one of the few critics, the few top critics at least, to give this film a positive review. And this gives me so much respect for Scott, because can you imagine how much crap he must have gotten for that?
Oh, dude.
Amongst his, like, critical community, his, you know, peers and stuff. But, oh, you like Freddy Got Fingered.
It's like saying you like Twilight.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the reason why this movie is so hated on, and admittedly, you know, I can see why it turns people off, but I think the reason why there hasn't been kind of this looking back at it as a surrealist film is because of Tom Green's popularity at the time, because people saw him as, this MTV guy, Tom Green, So critics just went in expecting like American Pie, but they should have gone inspecting something like a Louis Bunuel film, really.
It's funny because Roger Ebert mentions Louis Bunuel in his review too.
Yeah, but we'll go to A.O. Scott's review first.
Oh, okay.
Should I read the whole thing? Why not? We've got time.
Well, that's like two pages long, dude.
Well, okay, I'll
do some excerpts.
The final credits of Freddy Got Fingered and its redundant but obligatory outtakes roll to the sound of Eminem's white boy hip-hop anthem, The Real Slim Shady, which includes a reference to this movie's director, star, and co-writer. Why, the rapper asks, and here I must paraphrase, do people take offense at his lyrics when Tom Green can, with apparent impunity, violate a dead moose on MTV? It's a fair enough question. It's somewhat disingenuous. Eminem and Mr. Green, who rose to fame as a creator and host of a prank-driven show on that cable channel, share a taste, if that's the right word, for the confrontational shock tactics. And they have become, not entirely against their will, fodder for the latest round of pious hand-wringing about the state of youth-oriented pop culture for their brazen affronts to decency and propriety. But forget about all that for a moment. For the record, no dead moose appears in Freddy Got Fingered. Though Mr. Green does stimulate a live elephant and a lusty stallion, decks himself out shaman style in the bloody hide of a roadkill buck, and wears a human umbilical cord duct taped to his navel. Still, just as Eminem disarms anyone who bothers to listen to his songs, rather than quoting them secondhand for the purposes of punditry, with his verbal wit and rhythmic dexterity, so does Mr. Green stage his gross sets with a demented but unmistakable integrity. Like it or not, he's an artist.
Okay, I'm going to actually read from Ebert's review that kind of backs that up a little bit.
Ooh.
I will read just two paragraphs. First one is the why he hated it part. This movie doesn't scrape the bottom of the barrel. This movie isn't the bottom of the barrel. This movie isn't below the bottom of the barrel. This movie doesn't deserve to be mentioned in the same sentence with barrels. Yeah. But the next sentence, many years ago when surrealism was new, Luis Buñuel and Salvador Dali made Un Chien Andalou, I'm so butchering that, but oh well, a film so shocking that Buñuel filled his pockets with stones to throw at the audience if they attacked him. Green, whose film is in the surrealist tradition, may want to consider the same tactic. The day may come when Freddy Got Fingered is seen as a milestone of neo-surrealism. The day may never come when it is seen as funny.
He's wrong on that part, though.
Oh, dude. Dude.
Well, that's the thing, too. I believe when I first talked about this movie on the show, I also, not only did I compare it to surrealism, but I compared it to Michael Haneke's Funny Games. I think in a way this film is a big joke on the audience. In a way, it's Tom Green.
Oh, it absolutely is.
It's Tom Green who, you know, it's a joke itself that he got the money to make this movie.
I think it's fair to say that we would get something similar to this if Andy Kaufman had gotten the funding to make and write and direct his own movie too.
Yeah, but it's also Tom Green taking a look at his audience, you know, 13-year-old boys and saying, "You love me? You really love me? Well, watch how far I can go."
And no one expected it.
No, that's the thing. And these people are, you know, these people just wanting like American Pie are turned off. And the problem is no one went into this expecting an art film.
No. Not at all. I think you really can make an argument for Freddy Got Fingered that it's a performance art piece in many ways.
Yes, and I think there are things in it that are like genuinely visually interesting. Like there's a shot in the movie where I realize that this movie is kind of a work of art where I think he's having it's like a counseling with his dad, his mom, and a psychiatrist or something, and it's a scene where he accuses his dad of fingering his brother, and he's like, "He's a child molester," and he jumps, he like breaks, so throws something, I think like a something through a window, and he jumps out of the window, but in slow motion, and it's actually like a beautiful shot, like a beautifully composed shot that is like amazing. That's the point where I realized Tom Green is a genuinely talented filmmaker.
Oh man, you know there are flashes in the film that are decent, but honestly, I felt dumber as a human being after seeing this movie.
And Daddy, would you like some sausage? Is just like that is interesting, even if you don't find it funny. That is interesting.
Well, especially in the context of the accusations he makes against his father too.
Yeah.
Wow. I can't go there with you, but I understand what you're saying.
And, well, I want to bring up his next movie now in our discussion, this Stealing Harvard. I didn't watch the entire thing, but you know why? Because it was just so middle of the road and bland.
It was. It was offensively bland, whereas Freddy Got Fingered, you can say many things about it. It definitely was not bland.
Exactly. I think that's the setting that Tom Green works in. He works in these... He's like a surrealist Buster Keaton in ways, or a surrealist Charlie Chaplin. I know, you know, a lot of people listening to this who are big film buffs are going to
throw up in their mouth a little bit.
Yeah, they're going to write me off. But you know what? I stick by it. And I think people should go back and view this film. Yes, it might turn you off, but there's interesting stuff in here that you will see in no other movie being made by Hollywood.
Here's my question. What happened to Freddy?
Oh, yeah, because, like, the last scene was...
he's still in the boys' home.
Yeah, I guess he's stuck there.
Like, does Tom Green have siblings?
I think he does, actually, in real life. I could be wrong, but... Again, that's something I would also figure into the psychology of this film. Because I'm sure... Yeah, I think... there's the cartoon he makes late in the movie that I think is honestly something like Tom Green would do, and also kind of a comment on the cartoon industry, so to speak. And I love that quote. "You hear the funny sound? You hear the funny sound? It's my hooves! It's my hooves!"
It's kind of taken a jab at all the movies that came out after like Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah. And I have to say, this movie, I do think towards the end it does run out of steam a bit, especially when they do go to Pakistan.
Oh, gosh.
I think it does kind of run a little out of ideas, but I still overall really admire this film.
Okay.
Now I guess we should talk about Life After Freddy.
Yes. Go for it.
Pretty much, Freddy Got Fingered was a pretty big box office and critical disaster, and Tom Green was kind of forced into exile for a while, you know? He kind of wore out all his goodwill. He pretty much, like, I think the last movie he was in was like a straight-to-video Canadian movie called Bob the Butler with Brooke Shields. And
yeah, he's got like four other movies in his IMDb, but none of them made it.
There's something I want to mention. I forgot to mention earlier, going back to his MTV days. But this is a guy who got his cancer special
because he had
testicular cancer, and he actually had a 1-hour special that included like footage of his surgery and stuff. So, in fact, yes, that's seen in the film. Freddy Got Fingered.
Is it?
Yeah, there's a point where I think it's Freddy who's watching TV, and they're showing a part of it on the TV, so.
Okay, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, but I also remember, I remember Tom Green having a talk show after, it was pretty short-lived, but I think it was like 2002, so the year after Freddy Got Fingered came out, and I remember watching it, really enjoying it, and I'm not sure, I'm not actually entirely sure here, this is a sign that I guess I'm a bad fan, but I think this is where the Bum Bum song premiered.
Is it? Well, no, it premiered on MTV, so it was before.
Yeah, but his talk show was on MTV.
Okay, so you're actually talking about the Tom Green. He had two Tom Green shows on MTV.
Yeah, he had a talk show after.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure at least. Let me look it up here. Well, I was initially wrong. He actually had a nightly talk show in 2003, the new Tom Green show, which was a far more traditional show, but it didn't last very long. Though, it set a good precedent for later his current talk show. He does from his basement in his home. And it's an internet talk show, and if you've ever watched it, it's very interesting to watch, just because it's extremely candid, and I really enjoy that, to be honest.
Okay, and is it just like a TomGreen.com or?
Yeah, and it's something you'll watch, and you'll just be surprised by what his guests like say. Like, well, it's not always good, because a lot of times the guests, they kind of embarrass themselves, but because the candidness sometimes leads to some real douchebaggery from them. But
nice,
it's just a really interesting setting, and watching a show without a laugh track is pretty interesting too.
Was the original show done with a laugh track, or was it done in front of an audience?
I think it was done in front of an audience.
That's what I thought too.
But I want to talk about the Bum Bum song.
Do you now?
Yeah.
I remember liking this song, thinking it was kind of funny when it first came out. I actually watched it yesterday. It doesn't hold up for me so much.
I still find it funny, but, you know, I laugh at a lot of things.
Fair enough.
But I remember part of the humor of Tom Green isn't necessarily that what he's doing is hilarious. It's that the fact that this is supposed to be funny, it's so stupid that the fact that people find this funny is funny in itself. And I think the Bum Bum song is a great example. Like, one of the things that's funny about it is the fact that it was like a huge hit. And I think like
it was on the top of TRL.
Yeah, exactly. That is inherently hilarious.
Yeah, and it wasn't like when they made the boy band backlash, and they had everyone who hates boy bands vote for New Kids on the Block to be number one. This was like legitimately people loved this video.
Exactly. It's just a sign, you know, of what the control that Tom Green had. And I'm sure a lot of this is what drove him to go to these lengths for Freddy Got Fingered. The people said, you know, like, the Bum Bum song is this big of a hit. I have to test my audience and see just how far they will go to support me, you know?
Here's the thing. I don't think he was trying to see how far he could go with them supporting him. I think he was seeing how far he could go before they would turn on him.
Well,
which I think is very, again, very Kaufman-esque.
Yeah. But, yeah, he actually released a rap album a few years ago, too.
Really?
Yeah. And it included a new version of the Bum Bum song called My Bum Is On Your Lips.
Okay, that's probably a takeoff from when Eminem put that in his song.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I don't know. Okay.
That's the thing. When I've gotten so much crap being a Tom Green fan. When I bring him up or Freddy Got Fingered, people just look at me like, ugh. But there really is so much more to admire about him than, say, I don't know, Dane Cook or something.
How did I know you were going to go there?
Because Dane Cook is popular with the young people.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, right. I will take a guy who goes to these lengths and does these interesting things over a guy who plagiarizes his jokes from Louis C.K. and dances around on stage. You know what I mean?
Okay. I'm not a big Dane Cook fan, so I will take your word on it.
And yeah, maybe Tom. And actually, did you see him on Celebrity Apprentice?
No, I didn't. I saw that he was on there, but I never watched it.
I remember seeing the promo, and it featured him in a wedding dress, and I'm like, I gotta watch this.
And you didn't watch it, did you?
I did watch it.
Did you? Was it good?
I only watched the first episode. It just, the other people on it were just Andrew Dice Clay. Ugh.
Didn't he and Tom Green get into a fight at one point?
Yeah, he was on his talk show, actually.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's... Do you have anything to add? I think we should. I think
I'm kind of done. I'm good.
Yeah, I think we're reaching an end here. Okay. Overall, I think Tom Green is an admirable comedian who goes to interesting lengths, and more people should give him a shot and not write him off.
And I still condemn them a dumber human being for having seen both Freddy Got Fingered and Stealing Harvard in 2 days.
Well, the thing is, you know, I knew there was a 0.00000006% chance that you'd like Freddy Got Fingered, but I'm glad that you at least found things to admire about it.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, it's nothing I'd ever recommend anybody unless they were feeling very adventurous in their film watching. But it's not a complete waste, no.
Yeah, and I hope, you know, you people listening to this, you hear this and you say, you know what, I think I'm going to check it out. And you know what, email me about it.
Just if you make it 10 minutes into the movie, you might as well finish the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
If for no other reason than to see Drew Barrymore get the crap beat out of her.
Actually, that's another thing we should mention, is marriage to Drew Barrymore.
And that's over, right?
Yeah, but I remember hearing, because he wrote a book about his experiences in Hollywood, and apparently when they got married, he felt very alienated because she had, like, all her Hollywood friends over there, and he had, like, all his family from Canada and stuff.
It's like Glenn Humplink, and yeah.
Yeah, it's just a sign. He's always been just a bit of an outsider.
And there's nothing wrong with it. That's why he's doing his new internet show from his basement.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't know. Like, I don't know if he needs to, I don't know if he needs to do any more movies, just because I think he's... Freddy Got Fingered was his peak, but you
and
know.
I think he kind of burned that bridge pretty good with that movie too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But, well, let us know what you think about Tom Green, though, because I'd be very fascinated if there are people who are of a like mind of Ethan. So, let's go ahead and move on to what is hitting theaters this week. This week is actually a pretty decent week. Yeah, we've got The Box, which. As mentioned at the beginning of the episode, if you've listened to Cameron Diaz, you already know what happens in the movie. And she's blabbed it like 3 or 4 times, right?
Has she? I thought she just did it at Comic-Con.
I heard she like blabbed it again somewhere else.
Oh, Cameron.
I don't know. And then we've got the Jim Carrey.
Anyway,
yeah. We've got a Christmas
Carol. I'm very excited.
You're excited to see it?
I was just going
to
say, yeah, that's all. See The Box.
Is it because it's who's directing it?
Yeah, R. Kelly.
Wow. After the Tom Green thing, that takes me bad places. So, okay. We've got Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey, which I don't know. I'm seeing it Monday. We'll see how it is. And then we've got The Fourth Kind, which, if I didn't know better, sure might possibly be a bit of a grab on Paranormal Activity, you think?
They're certainly lucky that it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way. I mean, there's no way that they're directly related because I mean, they got Mila Jovovich to do it.
Mm.
But still, it's like, wow, that's real. They were probably holding on to it, and they're like, oh, now's a good time to dump it.
Mm.
I don't know. And then we've got The Men Who Stare at Goats, which hasn't been getting amazing word.
It's got a good title, though.
It does. It does.
And I think with this and Drag Me to Hell, goats are making a major cinematic comeback.
Okay. I hadn't even thought about that. Well, well played, sir. You're in your Tom Green mode. And then finally, in limited release, we've got Precious, which just, it holds no interest for me at all whatsoever.
I've heard, it looks like a tough movie to watch, but I've heard it's really good, so I'm interested in seeing it.
Yeah, it's the opening night movie at the Denver Film Fest, but I'm not going to pay like $35 to go see that movie. That's just not happening. Let's move on to what is hitting DVD next week as well. I'm keeping it kind of short and sweet, but it's got some pretty good releases out there. We've got Up, the 4-disc Blu-ray or 2-disc DVD edition. 4-disc Blu-ray, really?
Well, one's a digital copy, right?
And I'm betting one is a DVD of the movie.
Just to make the point of... Isn't the point of Blu-ray that you can fit, you have like endless space? So what's the point of a 2-disc Blu-ray even?
Well, unless you're going like the Criterion route, like what Criterion did for the 2-disc Benjamin Button.
Mm.
That's kind of, you know, that makes sense. Mm. But yeah, 4-disc, that's just kind of overkill. And you can get the really crappy, if you pre-order it at a Best Buy, you can get a really, it's a 10, but they're calling it a steel book, you know, but it's a 10. Yeah, I'm good. Then we've got The Ugly Truth coming out, which probably is going to suck. But then we've got some interesting stuff. We have got Watchmen, The Ultimate Cut.
Does that like come with some like something like a poster or a squid?
It's possible. Who knows? Who knows? It'll probably be up to whoever's doing what special edition. I was in Best Buy and saw the Rorschach edition of the 2-disc set for Director's Cut.
Mm. They got to make all the money they lost on it. So
This is true. We have also got, you know, because G.I. Joe's coming out this week, we've got G.I. Joe next week, except it's the cartoon. It's the Foot Locker of the complete collector set of G.I. Joe.
Wait, the Hurt Locker of G.I. Joe?
The Foot Locker.
Oh, I see. It's like Duke becomes addicted to adrenaline and stuff and
disarms
bombs.
Totally. Okay. I know that some people pre-ordered it and have already received their copies, but this is like the official like retail release of it.
I think I remember Jay Cheel from Film Junk second mention.
That's kind of why I was going for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just for you to get your Joshua Jackson fix, you can pick up Dawson's Creek, the complete series.
Top of my Christmas list.
Woohoo! And then also coming out in normal retailers like Transworld stores, so Suncoast and FYE and all that fun stuff, as well as every Blockbuster in the country on Netflix for rent, as well as Netflix streaming. Ink will be coming out as well.
Yay
Woot. We'll have to
still haven't gotten my screener back.
I know it's coming. But then we have quite possibly the most epic crap title of the week we've had in a long time. Would you like to give the title, sir, or shall I just do it?
Well, you're the biggest fan, so
okay. Coming out next week, we have got Robsessed. That's right. It's an unauthorized look into the life of Robert Pattinson.
Robert Patrick?
Yes. See, I'd pay for that because then I might get some footage from the Marine.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here's the funny thing about this. It's like all access, quote unquote, blah, 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 unauthorized. Hey, we're trying to make a buck off Twilight. That's all it is. But the interesting thing is the Amazon reviews are pretty much 24 of them are 5-star reviews and 49 of them are 1-star reviews.
Wait, can I just guess what the 5-star reviews are like?
Sure. Wow, that's totally this one right here.
Hmm.
And you know, we should take a moment to pause and say, how sad is it that New Moon did not come out this Halloween weekend?
Oh.
It was a prime missed opportunity, I'm telling you. I don't know. Here's the funny thing about it. Yes, there are 1-star reviews, but they're not the kind of 1-star reviews you'd think that we'd be normally getting. You know, this movie's going to blow. You know, Robert Pattinson's a tool, whatever you want to say. No, most of these that are very one-star-ish are upset because they steal work from fan sites word for word.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
I don't know. Yeah. It's crap. It's going to suck. Merry Christmas. If you want to shoot us an email, actually, you know, we have got a crap load of voicemail to get through too. Sorry, it's a little bit off show, guys. But let me pull up our first voicemail, which I believe is from Valencia. So let's go ahead and roll that right now.
Hi, this is Valencia. Normally, I would have like a list of things I want to talk about, but I didn't do it like I was supposed to. First off, I would like to say that I realized when I talked to my friend about, like, you know, the movie podcast I listen to, because I know he don't. You are always talked about, even if I don't, like, mention the name of the show. Okay, on to topic number one. I would like to thank Barry, because I know he's not there this week, about the email explanation of my question. I texted my friend and mentioned I wanted to see the second Basic Instinct, and he was under the impression I didn't like the first one. Well, in reality, I was like, whatever. But, yeah, Barry's explanation kind of convinced me to want to see the second one. I don't know. Zombieland, I saw it last week. And even though Melissa was talking about seeing Adventureland, I agree with her. Jesse Eisenberg reminds me of Michael Cera, and through the first 15 minutes of Zombieland, just all that I kept seeing was Michael Cera, but I don't like either one of those. She mentioned Seth Rogen. I don't like Seth Rogen either. When he was on, the one with McLovin, yeah, that one, I didn't know who he was, and I really wish it would have stayed that way. I have seen Zach and Mary make a porno, and I'm sort of a Kevin Smith fan, but not really. But it had Randall in it, so it was okay. I'm messing up. I'm stalling. I think that was it. It might have been just Seth Rogen, Jesse Eisenberg. Thank you, Barry, and that's it. I'll talk to y'all later. Bye.
Our thanks to Valencia for that little email, voicemail. You know what I mean. Barry. I got the little gist of it from Barry. What he told Valencia about Basic Instinct was that it was so cutting edge because of how erotic the film was. On top of the fact that it was actually a really good murder mystery too. Second one, I guess, was kind of okay. I don't really remember. Didn't have a whole lot of desire to see it. I guess we should go ahead and roll on to our next voicemail. I'll just go ahead and play it next.
Hello, this is John Somlich calling again. And I wanted to refer back to a comment a few shows back about Cagney and Lacey, the menopause years, the DVD. Now, I can't recommend that series at all. Any of the later Cagney and Lacey series where the two women from the show seem to have gained a lot of weight from the DVD covers that you see. But I do want to highly recommend the original series, which I bought the first season of on DVD a couple years back, and it's still available, it would appear. Really great show. It probably could be described as sort of a Hill Street Blues with a two women in the lead roles, perhaps. But dealt with a lot of issues at time, had a lot of serious episodes about, you know, issues like date rape and things like that. But also had a lot of humor mixed in and touching moments. It featured an interracial kiss, which must have been a big deal back in the early 80s and so forth. So I highly recommend that you can get the first season on DVD. And now the remaining seasons, which I'd like to get, are not available on DVD, but apparently in the U.S. only, you can get them on some video on demand option via Amazon. I can't get those where I live, so I'm going to have to, I don't know, maybe when I visit the U.S. until I'll just watch them all or something. I'm not sure. But I'm still hoping for the DVD.
Bye. Thanks to John for a little bit of the Cagney and Lacey love. Yeah, I remember the show was really good back in the day, too. It was funny. Yeah, it was a little issue-y, preachy, but yeah, I have no idea about the menopause years. I really have no desire to see that, but the original show was cool. So yeah, let's go ahead and just jump right into our next voicemail, which is quite possibly the nicest thing we've ever had said to us.
Hello, Spring Geeks. This is Tommy, a.k.a. D. Quartermain on Twitter. So much to say. I'll try to keep it brief. I've been listening to you guys for a long time now, and while I consider myself a movie guy, I haven't really been a film guy, and you guys have really, with all your directors, you know, from serious to comedy, either way, you've really helped kind of open my eyes and try to get me to appreciate more film. You guys rock. You have, and I just never have gotten off my butt to say so. And I do want you to know, me and my wife, we just signed up for Netflix, and I told her about Ink, and she read the premise, and she's like, yeah, I've watched that, so it is on our list. So, and I saw the trailers. Wow. But the fact that the wife was interested, I thought was just amazing, and I love my wife. Enough rambling out of me. Well, just keep doing what you're doing. And another fan, and talk to y'all later. Bye.
And thank you, Tommy. That kind of really, that's kind of like our goal here, wouldn't you say, Ethan? Like, to expose people to the art form that is film?
Expose being the key word.
Dude, Tom Green, I'm telling you. See, this is what Tom Green does to people. I'm just saying. I don't know. All right, we got one more voicemail that is rather in-depth, and it's a good one. It's from our good friend over at geekradiodaily.com, Ding. The good, the wonderful Mr. Billy Flynn.
Hello, Screen Geeks. This is Billy Flynn, the guy whose messages you don't play. I kid. So, hey, everybody. Hope you had yourself a fantastic Halloween. I would like to throw out a couple things about stuff that was mentioned on the show. First and foremost, oh, how I loved and adored Where the Wild Things Are. I couldn't agree with what you said more. I mean, I've just never seen such an honest look at, like, a little kid's feelings and emotions. The scene with the igloo, traumatizing. The whole thing with Max and his issues with anger, and wow, no movie's ever been brave enough to do something like this in a, pardon it, but quote-unquote kid's film. It's not a kid's film, folks. You know, just amazing that they did that. Paranormal Activity. I saw myself some Paranormal Activity, and I enjoyed it, had a damn fine time with it. But let's go out here and let me throw out a couple of things. Here, the girl, Kate, awesome. The whole thing worked because of her. The boyfriend, yeah, there was places where he was just a total douche. And not like his character was, but like the real him who really is a douche was coming through a bit. Anyway, I don't think it's as good as the Blair Witch Project. I really do not. The Blair Witch Project, there was people in the theater comparing this to the Blair Witch Project as it was happening. In fact, no spoilers, but at a certain point in the film, when it looked like the film might end, when it still had some time to go, someone in the back row went, "Don't you go off now. It'll be like the Blair Witch. I want a real ending." Let me go ahead and settle this for everyone. If you watched the Blair Witch Project and did not understand the ending, you really missed the setup that went on all throughout that movie. The Blair Witch Project is such a wonderful feeling of dread and unease the whole way through. And, well, let's just do some spoilers for a movie that's 10 years old. You know, that's Russell Parr's house they're in at the end. The house that burned down, like, you know, the people burned down, you know, years and years and decades ago, that's his house they're standing in. That's not possible. There's weird, creepy things going on in the Blair Witch Project. Paranormal Activity is able to show you more of it, which works. It's really cool the way they do that, but as a story, it doesn't hold up. You know, they're trying to present it as if it's a true story. And if there was a real true story of actual Paranormal Activity caught on tape, we all would have known that. The ending was changed. The theatrical ending is there now. I won't say much about either one, except to say that the original ending, I understand why they changed it for the theatrical ending. For a theatrical ending, that is a more satisfying ending. The original ending, while longer, I think is more bleakly ironic in how it resolves issues. And, yeah, story-wise, Blair Witch Project has a story, but there is a payoff if you are paying attention throughout the movie. Something that kind of disappointed me in Paranormal Activity is they brought up, you know, all these things being brought up about how, you know, this sort of thing is not unusual to one of the characters, because I really don't want to give away any spoilers, because you should absolutely see this movie with no idea, no trailers, nothing, just go see it. But there were some things they brought up about her past that I thought was going to get some form of resolution and did not. In fact, I would dare say this film has less of a real ending than the Blair Witch Project does. So anyway, I like both of them, but really, Blair Witch Project, I think overall, is the strongest one. It's the most satisfying movie to me, but okay, Paranormal Activity did give me chills. I got literal chills in two places, so very effective there. As for Roman Polanski, wow, how's that for a segue, huh? As for Roman Polanski, what everyone has said is absolutely accurate. Pedophile, yes. Going through some things that none of us could possibly begin to understand, yes. Should he be let go simply because of his filmmaking history? No. But I think what me and a bunch of people, the way I look at this is like this. There are so many problems we have in this country that the police could be working on. There are so many unsolved crimes the police could be working on. And to the best of my knowledge, we still have this ginormous deficit. Was this really the best way to spend our money and our resources? I just don't know. Granted, he should do something. Yes, he should. But, and Dave, go back and read about the trial. I'm not going to justify why Roman Polanski fled the country. But, you know, his judge was worse than Judge Ito. I mean, he was playing hardcore with the press and was really trying to use this to make him famous. So if I had an assload of money, I could, and I did something incredibly stupid and my world was completely gone, I think it's possible I could have fled the country if I thought that this was going to happen. At one point, they were going to resolve all this, and the judge didn't want to let that happen. Anyway, go read it. It's all, I don't want to get on that topic, blah, blah, blah. Nice to have everybody back. Now I just hope to see more than two shows in one release. That'd be awesome. Give us the trifecta of episodes. That would rock. Hope you don't have two stuffed on candy, and I'll catch you later.
Dude, really? Three shows in one time? No, 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 no. I hope not. I hope I don't ever get that far behind again. Yeah.
Mm.
But good stuff on Paranormal Activity, and I'm going to have to, like, I have to see it before looking up what the other ending is. But yeah, I definitely want to see it at some point. I'm kind of wondering if this would play well on a TV, like playing it, watching it at home on TV with the lights out.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way to watch it, actually.
Okay, so I'll probably just wait for a DVD on that. Interesting stuff on the Polanski stuff, yes. I don't know about the judge and everything. I just, yeah, I don't know. We'll leave it alone. We brought it up once, but I thought we should discuss it, and that's done. If you want to shoot us an email or voicemail, by all means do. You can email us at podcast, Dave, Ethan, Barry, or Melissa, all at screengeeks.com. You can also give us a call on our voicemail line at 719-553-5664. And next week, we're going to get back to the Wes Craven series. We're going to be talking about Vampire in Brooklyn. You okay over there?
Yeah, right now at least.
Okay. Well, we're just about done anyway. Let's just knock this out. Next week, yeah, like I said, Vampire in Brooklyn. We'll be back. It will be great fun. But until then, this is Dave.
This is Ethan.
See ya.
My bum is on the man, bum is on the man. It's a lot of fun to put your bum on a man. My bum is on the step, bum is on the step. Don't fall on the step, you might hurt your bum. And that's not very fun if you fall down and hurt your bum. I like to put my bum on things. It's fun for everyone.
Okay, so I won't skateboard anymore. So I just thought it'd be fine for the video.
My bum is on the cheese! Bum is on the cheese! If I get lucky, I'll get a disease! My bum is on the Swedish! 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 My bum is on the gum! My bum is on the gum! I can blow a bubble with my bum bum bum! My bum is on the ship! The battleship! I hope they don't shoot the cannon in my bum! Poo all over the place! Poo
cum! That is very fun. Shoot a cannon in your bum. I like to
put my bum on things. It's fun for everyone.
I like to put my bum on things. It's fun for everyone.
My bum is on the dog. My bum is on the cat. My bum is on the phone. My bum is all alone. The rail is all alone. The man is all alone. The Swedish is all alone. My bum is all alone. One, two, three, four. My bum is all alone. 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 Get the poo off my bum.
Get the poo off.
I need the poo off my bum. I gotta get the poo off my bum.
Poo poo.
I wanna hear the cannon. Don't let me hear the cannon. Now get the poo off my bum! I want the poo-poo off my bum-bum! Can I hear the loon again, Tula? Okay. I want to hear the loony loon! The funny, funny loon loon!
What the hell?